I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right. You're going to meet a couple of people that I've met over the course of the weekend. And the first one is Dan Jones. So, Dan, first of all, welcome to All Marine Radio. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Max. Certainly appreciate it.
The Bar X project, how did you cross paths with this thing, and how did you get up here to Montana?
So I found out about Bar X Project through another Marine, one of my best friends, Rob Jones. He met James Moran at some point.
Hold on. Rob Jones, pretty amazing dude, right?
You could say that. I don't know. It's just normal for me. I'm used to it. But everybody else, yeah, definitely.
Let me tell you, irony. So we're talking, right? And Dan's telling me about Rob, and I'm like, I think I've interviewed that dude. But I forgot. I pulled out my phone, and then somebody else must have said anything. And like any moron, I got distracted by another shiny object. And so I went to bed last night, and I thought, I never looked that up. And bigger than shit, in December of 2017, interviewed Rob Jones. Because he was running, 31 marathons in 31 days?
Correct. 31 marathons, 31 days, 31 cities.
And, oh, by the way, he's a double amputee.
I mean, I guess it's just not easy.
Come on, everybody does it. Yeah. Right? Everybody does that, right? You know, and with two good limbs. I've never heard anybody do that in my life. So, and then he just ran for Congress, right? In Virginia?
Yep, he did. He did. He ran, I think it's the 9th district. Unfortunately, did not win the primary, but he's already got other plans that he's ready to move forward with. So, I mean, he doesn't stop for much. He really doesn't.
And you guys got blown up, 45 minutes apart?
About 45 minutes apart, yep, staying in Afghanistan. Threw the battalion for a little bit of a loop because we both have the same last name and we both have our first initials are the same. And so, you know, at some point or another, one of us got lost.
All right, so before we talk more about this, we got to learn about you. Born and raised where?
Virginia, right around Richmond.
Right around Richmond. And how does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
I think because it's hard. Like, nobody in my family, so both my grandfathers were in the Army during Korea. Nobody's ever been in the Marine Corps. For me, it was just, I don't know, it was tougher than the Army. It looked really difficult and just kind of looked more badass. So, that's what.
So, but again, nobody inputs, even though your grandfathers had served, no Marines in your family. You're just that kid.
I'm that guy in so many situations, but especially this one.
So, how do you get to, so you join the Marine Corps? MOS?
1371, Combat Engineer.
Combat Engineer. And how do you wind up in Sangin in 2010? Were you active? Were you a reservist at that time? And then you guys were with supporting 3-7, right?
Correct. So we were both reserve side, had deployed to Iraq 2008, came back for about a year or something, and Afghanistan popped up. For me, the turning point as far as like going to Afghanistan was I wanted to, but being close to graduation was considering maybe not. But Rob and
graduation from
Virginia Military Institute.
Whoa, you're one of those dudes.
One of those guys.
Nice. I have good friends that went there.
It's a great place. I've got some great friends from there, and thankfully, a lot of my Marine Corps buddies are also VMI graduates, so we speak the same language.
Oh, my God.
But Afghanistan came up, and Rob was going, Ronnie was going, a bunch of my best friends were going, and I was like, I can finish school later. I'm going to Afghanistan. And so, yeah, just luck of the draw, we got attached to 3-7 and ended up in Sangin. I forget. We started out right around Delaram, but then ultimately ended up in Sangin.
And so what were you guys doing on a daily basis? Were you guys doing IEDs, route clearance, all that, all the stuff that engineers were kind of jacks of all trades, kind of super grunts, but then other shit happens and we're like, yeah, this has your name on it, boys. Get after it.
So for me and Rob, I think we're pretty lucky in a lot of respects. We're kind of like an O3 with a little bit of explosives and a metal detector, looking for IEDs most of the time. Most of the time we're on foot. So we would go out and we would patrol, do everything the other guys were doing, but then it would reach a point where we'd be like, hey, we need to sweep that before we're going through it or something like that. Or, you know, say if they want to get through a door, we'd, you know, pop a lock, if you will. Just things like that. But for me, I was lucky. I had a pretty awesome deployment because some of the other stuff that engineers have to do, which is absolutely necessary as far as like construction and things like that. I think I ran a piece of heavy equipment a couple times, filled some sandbags, but otherwise got lucky and just got to punch out with the
operate.
Ground slot.
The now you're going to come back on and we're going to talk about this in more detail, but you got talk about when you got blown up, what happened and what was it?
So I guess like the short version is, you know, we're waiting across, I was attached to Cat White Weapons Company. And so we're getting ready to punch across the, Sangin Riverbed there. And, there's a little bit of a hold up and a guy takes a pop
shot. Hold on. Cat White is, explain to everybody what that is. Who doesn't know?
I believe CAT stands for Combined Arms Anti-Tank, I believe. Right, and right, so it's, originally just a small section that could take out armor.
Right, 50 cals and Mark 19s normally, right, in
exactly.
up-armored Humvees.
Exactly. Right. And so we were in MATVs, but we just kind of had a whole lot of firepower in a four-truck section that could be that was very nimble for the battalion, company, right. whoever, right. As far as, like, blocking positions or maybe observing things or doing, like a post-blast or something like that, or battle damage assessment, excuse me. So we were... You know, we were waiting across the Sangin Riverbed there, and some guy takes a pop shot with an RPG, comes over top of the trucks, and at that point...
That guy will die relatively soon, right? Within, what, the next 48 hours?
You know, I'm not sure about that.
That it was the same guy?
I don't know if it was the same guy who, like, placed the IED, but... He, at that point, they didn't really want us to pursue. They didn't want us to do much.
But this isn't that young kid you were telling me about before.
No.
Oh, that's a different guy.
But yeah, there was a tree line there, so they wanted us to just punch over the tree line, get eyes on, and, you know, just make sure that if he did try and do it again, there was somebody there to talk to him about it, I guess you'd say. Anyway, we get out of the trucks. Other guys are punching ahead of me, kind of fanning out down the tree line. And as I'm moving over the tree line, I just remember looking down, and something caught my eye, like a piece of brass, and I was like, huh, that's weird. And then next thing, you know, I was in the air, like I initiated an IED. From there.
In the air.
It had the dust around me and just everything.
Isn't that crazy? When you talk to guys and they get blown up, there's certain parts of it that they remember in slow motion, high definition.
It's, you know, that really is it, because it was like a surreal moment, if you will, just that fine dust kind of like all around me, and just like, I don't know if I can say fuck. Like, I don't know if
this
I can
say this is Marine Radio. We say fuck all the time.
Sweet,
man.
But it's like, I just fucking set off an IED.
That went through your head.
There's nothing else that could have happened right there. But, and then from there, it was just, it's everything from like, you know, horror, worry, like everything, like
all spectrum. Crammed into a nanosecond.
Oh, without a doubt. But I was lucky because I was close to the trucks and the Marines I was there with. So Cat White, as well as, you know, actually I was fortunate because the 6x from our the engineer platoon was right there too. And those guys did what they had to do to get to me, get me in the truck, get me on a bird as fast as possible.
Explain to people, because, you know, everybody assumes that, you know, when somebody gets hurt, right, you know, people come running to you and tend to you right away. The nature of the fight up there, explain how people had to get to you.
So basically, I mean, it wasn't a great distance, but what they had to be concerned about was secondary IEDs, right. Or was that what initiates a complex ambush or something like that? So they couldn't just let their guard down. So those guys did a hell of a job essentially doing like a hasty sweep to get up to me.
And describe what that is. So a hasty sweep, guys were on their hands and knees, and they're working the dirt in front of them as they move. What is a hasty sweep?
So basically what you're doing is you're working and you're sweeping, and a lot of times you're using a metal detector, but you're using your eyes more so because you're going to see things. Now, yeah. Granted, my ID just disturbed everything, but you're sweeping as fast as possible and using your eyes to scan the terrain because you kind of got – you're on a bit of a time hack, right? You don't know what's happened to this Marine. But you also don't want to become another casualty or set something else off. So it's really just a very fast, you know, it's deliberate, but it's faster than just a standard deliberate sweep.
And truth be told, that when your IED goes off, you know, if something is in the ground, a lot of time that violent, you know, shudder of the earth will show you a straight edge or something irregular that isn't right. That will, I mean, that's what you did for a living, right?
Without a doubt. And, you know, if you get the opportunity to see something like that, and you know, we talk about baselines a lot, like you got a baseline for what the situation looks like. And so if you're in a random field and you're like, why is there a 2 foot like straight line right there? Like, what the fuck is that all about? Or, you know,
I know I didn't graduate from VMI, but that shouldn't be in the middle of this trail right here. That might be something. And then you go over it with your CMD, your compact metal detector, and all of a sudden beep 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 beep, and then you mark that, and then you move around it, and you're clearing to the guy, and then you're able to render first aid without setting off any secondaries.
Exactly, and that's the whole point of it, is to make sure one casualty doesn't become three, doesn't become five. And in that instance, they had placed other IEDs in that tree line. I mean, you know, the enemy knew what they were doing when they set up that little ambush
Always in clusters to do that. And those IEDs were deadly because they were directional, right? So that thing's aimed at the pressure plate. And I can't tell you how many Marines that I medevaced, and you know, if that thing gets into your pelvis, I mean, you know, it's a race with the vascular surgeon and you bleeding out and transfusions and organ failures. Where does this thing hit you? And you look okay today, right? So where does it hits you in the left leg?
Yeah. So basically got hit in the left leg, and so, you know, got some burns, broke my leg, a little bit of stuff to the eye and the ear and everything, but it was basically like he cut me in the half. The right side's pretty normal. Left side's just like a patchwork quilt of skin and muscle put places to cover up holes.
How about functionality? You mentioned your eye. Yeah, you had damage to your eye. Yes,
I did. I did. Yes, sir. And I've still got some stitches in there, so my vision's a little off. But I can do anything I want. I think I'm like definitely very fortunate. You know,
considering right.
Without a doubt, fortunate. The Marines who got me took care of me. When I got hit, how fast they did everything to get me stabilized, get me in a truck, get me on a bird. And then the doctors and nurses who over the course of the next like year and a half, whatever, like literally saved my leg, saved my eye. Like, I'm lucky without a doubt.
People, when you hear that, they're like, what? Right. But no, when you sit in a ward and you look at some of the damage that guys absorb, and medicine is so advanced now, and you know, we get them to a very sophisticated medical suite really quick. And so guys survive with devastating injuries. It's amazing what the human body can do. So when you hear somebody say in the context of that, I'm lucky, it sounds odd, but it's in fact true, right? You know it, you've seen it.
It is. And in a way, another reason I'm lucky is most of, you know, I did get a TBI, but most of my injuries are physical, and you can fix what's physical. But when it comes to things like TBI, you know, kind of the mental health side of the house, like, you can't just open the hood and, you know, figure out what's wrong there. So, you know, I got a close friend who was, he was blown up three times, three TBIs. Wow. And, he's dealt with things as a product of that. And, you know, in a way it's almost unfair because doctors can fix my leg, but they can't just go into his head and figure out what that TBI did to his brain.
What it did to his brain. Let's talk about up here. So what was your role? You had a role up here this weekend. And so what were you doing? Because you're not a 3-1 guy. You're a combat engineer, for God's sake. So that wasn't attached to them. So what was your role up here this weekend?
So I was fortunate because James just asked me to come out here and kind of facilitate getting the guys out to the ranch and making sure they're good when they get here, and working with Rob Lowe, who's co-founder of BarX. I joke and I was like, I just carry their bags. But no, really, it was a great opportunity for me just to hang out with some guys who genuinely...
But you're like the company gunny here?
I guess to a point. Still kind of learning everything. So Rob would be like, Daniel, go do that. No, Daniel, that doesn't go there. That goes over there. So in a sense. But really just making sure, like, these guys get out here and they don't have to worry about anything, because BarX is all about that. Like, they're going to get you out here. You're going to have a great time. They're going to get you home in between the flying in and out. Like, just chill. Have a great time.
You've been to other veteran things, right? This is different, though. This is guys who fought together. Describe it for people.
So, yeah, BarX brings out guys who actually deployed together, which is huge. You don't get this random just smattering, if you will, of people. They're like, oh, we got a veteran here. Like, no, these guys have the same experiences. And what BarX does is it brings these guys out, gives them the opportunity to reconnect, because, I mean, we all get spread to the winds. Right. And then it gives them, you know, again, I hate like saying it like this, it gives them a safe place to just like have a drink, go fishing, and then just talk about shit. And so, you know, especially being Marines, being a little on the hard-headed side of the house, like, we're not very good about that talk about shit thing. So Bar X brings guys out here and puts them in a place where it's like, you can, you know, you can yell a little bit if you're upset about something. You're amongst friends. Like, you're talking about it. It's good. And it's kind of the first step, I think, in a way, towards, you know, if somebody's had issues that are residual from something, to get back with the guys. Because we all know that at the end of the day, like, it's the other Marines that help you. Like, if you have something going, those are the ones that help you. It's, you know, it's not other institutions and stuff like that. It's the guy on your left and right, whether you're in combat or at home.
Yeah, that's crazy. The so yesterday morning, you know, you come down to watch post-traumatic winning. What were your thoughts going into it? Did you think this is going to be a bullshit event, or did you have an open mind, and what did you think as you watched it?
I really didn't have any expectations per se. I mean, I won't lie, there's a little bit of that PFC that's like, fuck, he said kick a class, and like, when you say kick a class, I'm like, oh man, here we go. But no, I really didn't have a lot of expectation going into it, but I do like, I like post-traumatic and then winning. I don't like post-traumatic stress disorder, because post-traumatic stress disorder implies permanent, no solution. Post-traumatic winning is like, yeah, something happened, but like, it doesn't have to be bad on the backside. But other than that, I really just tried to sit down and just, like, I'm sitting in this room with, like, true warriors who are listening to this and just kind of seeing their reactions and looking at the program. So I tried to, I didn't have a lot going into it as far as expectations.
No, it's pretty amazing when you're up there presenting it and you're watching their reaction to it. You know, guys, you know, wiping tears because, and you have no idea what it is, whether... You know, at one point I was talking about conversations with your spouse and, you know, somebody's wiping tears from your eyes. And then later on you hear the story, like, it wasn't until 2012 my wife asked me, like, are you ever going to share with me what is the most significant events of your life? And he said, I was kind of ashamed. And we sat down and we, so you see it when you're presenting it. You work with foster kids in the Richmond area, and we had an awesome conversation last night about your thoughts about how this relates, how this brought to them by you relates to them and giving them a path to a great place.
Definitely. Yeah, it's and that's one thing here in the program and learning more about it that I think is awesome, because in a lot of way the civilian side of the house looks up to the military, or with, you know, I don't know if I want to say all, but anyway, you get that respect there. But it doesn't have to be just because somebody was in the military. Their experiences, what other people consider negative, can be a good for those people as well. So like in this case with the foster kids that we work with at the gym, S3E CrossFit, you know, this can be good for them because they're entertaining the military, but they also don't know exactly what they want to do. But they've had events in the past that, you know, they may say, well, it's not like being in combat. It's like you say, trauma is trauma is trauma, right? Okay. So the way we get past that trauma is the same, you know, in a lot of respects. So if I can take something I have, or like Matt Bain, who owns the gym, if he can take something like he has after being in the Navy for 22 years and find a way to translate it to them and say, hey, is it bad? Yes. Does it have to be bad? No. Here's how we can move forward with this.
How exciting is that for you? So you're sitting there yesterday with that in your head, watching that. How exciting is that for you?
I think it's pretty huge because, in a way, like, there's always been a little bit of like a separation, right? I'm a little bit older, but I've also been in the military. They know I've been injured. They don't know a lot about it. And I've always been the type that's like, you know, with everybody kind of standoffish about some of it. You know, I'll joke and be like, oh yeah, I got blown up. Yeah, it was a real blast. It was an explosion of color, yada, yada, yada. Just kind of play it off or whatever. But now I'm kind of like, you know what? These kids have their trauma. I've got mine. Like, we don't have to like sit down and kumbaya or whatever, but I got to probably be the one to go first in a lot of respects just to create a, you know, some degree of connection and show like, yeah, you're not in here because the gym's getting paid. Like, you're in here because we want to help you and we want you to be successful in whatever you decide to do. I hope it's the Marine Corps. I'm a little biased, but if you want to do the Air Force or you want to go on to college, like, yeah, we want to set you up for success in the future. That's what we're there for. The physical stuff is just it's a vehicle for it. So
no, but I mean, you and I were talking about signing, and it's like the power of your story, but more importantly, the power of your honesty to kids who, I mean, God only knows what their experiences have been in foster homes, right? I mean, some have been in there for a lot of years. Some have, you know, their families have, for whatever reason, been destroyed, and, you know, that somebody saw fit to put them in foster care. I mean, the pain involved in that for a young person. And then all of a sudden, somebody who I look up to, like, tells me this story that, like, holy shit. Like, I have so much in common. And then I think, and I don't think I know this, what's going to happen is what happens to me all the time. And that is, after I talk about me, all it does is open doors and people say, hey, Mac, can I tell you a story? And that's what, that I promise you, that's exactly what's going to happen to you. And you're going to change your life, man. And then, I mean, how exciting is that, that all this pain you've been through, what you live with, you know, the memories and all that stuff, all of a sudden, you know, another door opens and you're going to be able to leverage that for not only good, but great, man. I went to bed last night and I was thinking about that. I'm like, that's like awesome. Awesome.
That's like being a Marine though, right? Like, you know, whether it's on the battlefield or off the battlefield, like we all join for a reason. And there's purpose in that for me, which, you know, like we talked about a little bit, one of my things is like not seeing purpose in a lot of stuff. But like for me, that is like, that's getting close to what we did in uniform. And it's helping kids and it's helping the generations that are coming off the pike. And it's awesome. I think it's really cool. And I think, you know, the other thing about it is you don't have to have a damn degree to do it. Like, you just got to be willing to share your experiences and help them and stuff like that. So I think we can genuinely do it. And I hope it's good for them. You know, I really do.
Oh, let me tell you. I mean, just like it was, I mean, you know, guys sitting in there talking. I mean, Sergeant Major last night looks at me and says, you have the best post-active duty job in the world. And I thought about that, you know, when I was, I laid down last night to go to bed. I was like, that's cool, man. And it's true. The best part is it's true. But, you know, the cool thing is like, there's no reason you can't do what I do. I mean, I'll give you guys all this stuff. So you can go out there and try to be as cool as I am. And then I think what I love about it is that it's our Marine culture. And all we're doing is giving them Marine, like, 101, except for whatever reason, this dude McNamara has put these last steps and said, hey, man, this is what all these guys told me. And these guys went down this path. And if you live by this stuff, you can go up to the top of this mountain. And it's so beautiful up there. And everybody knows it's true. That's all these hard-ass motherfuckers, right, that come in and they're all like, at first they're looking at me like, why the fuck am I sitting in here with this asshole? And then, you know, then they're sitting up straight. Then they're leaning forward. And because it's nothing but true. And then when you can convince these guys, right, that they can go to a better place. And then the gunny last night is dogging me. I'm coming to work for you, man, right? Yep. He's dogging me upstairs. Oh, yeah. And he's like, yo, you think I'm joking? I'm not joking. I'm like, I don't think you're joking. He goes, oh, no, I think you do. You think I'm coming to work? I'm like, no, I don't, man.
He'd be great. He'd be awesome, too. Think about all that experience he's bringing to the house. Yours, his, I mean, Phantom Fury. Like, just, yeah. Oh, I love
it. But, I mean, and then that you can, you know, those kids in Richmond, I mean, that are groping the way we all have groped for years in this darkness. How do I make sense of this? You mean the best is going to be is that I'm gonna endure this shit for the rest of my life, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, we're not. We're gonna fucking win, right? And I agree with you. That's why when I heard General Neller say that we got to win, I said that's a fucking name, post-traumatic winning, because that's quintessentially Marine life. We're not marking time with shit. And when you look at kids and say that, they love it, man. Fuck that.
Yeah, well, it's like we talked about with the gentleman I was in NICO with when he was like, I just want to leave here with less baggage than I came in. And it's like, man, that's deep. But it's also like, that's what we're – nah, man, we can do better than that. Like, I feel like there's something more than just less baggage. Like, you know, 20 years, man. Like, less baggage is what we're going for. Not, you should be having a great life after this. Like, you worked your ass off, and you still got a lot of years ahead of you.
Right.
You know? So, that's the difference between this and, like, well, you know, it's okay. Everything's going to be fine. It's like, I haven't been fine for a fucking decade. Like, the fuck's going to change? Like, something's got to change, but the way we're doing it right now, isn't it? So.
Right. All right. First of all, thanks for doing this. And when you get back to Richmond, we'll hook up when I get back to Southern California.
Definitely.
And would love to hear more about the program that you're working on. Did you ever go back to BMI and finish your degree?
Yeah, so I actually didn't end up having to go back. There was a colonel in the NROTC department. I had 2 free credit elective hours, and to my knowledge, they got written off as study abroad. So got the degree. Mom's happy. Everything's good.
That's good. There you go. There you go. Checking all the boxes. All right. Dan Jones here, United States Marine Corps. More of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.